Hello, 1045. How's everybody doing this morning? Excited to be here, I hope. We are excited that you are here. You picked a great day to be here. We are kicking off a new series called Giving Up Today. It's going to last for 4 weeks. Going to end up with our marriage conference at the very beginning of March there. And so I hope you guys are here and you're going to get a lot out of it today and you're going to keep coming back because you're going to get a lot of tools and resources no matter where you are in your relationship world. I will say that at the end of the sermon, I'm going to have some time to answer some questions. And surely today's sermon is going to bring up some questions for some of you guys. And I'll tell you this, this is a great time to be in a life group. It is, because all month you're going to be having some wonderful discussions about marriage and relationships and all of that. And so if you're not currently in a life group, maybe you used to be, call your leaders up that used to lead your life group and say, we're getting the band back together, okay? Because it's just going to be a great time to, and if not, just take somebody out to lunch and go over the questions and just spend some time talking about those. But anyway, if you have questions throughout the sermon, text those in. Instructions will be on the screen. You can use our app, and I will do my best to get to those at the end of the sermon. But I want to tell you a story. The year was 1986, and it was the 50th, it was New Year's Day, and it was the 50th anniversary of the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, Texas, okay? And I was there to see Texas A&M play Auburn, all right? So I was there, and I cheered on the Aggie defense as they time after time shut down Auburn's star running back, Bo Jackson. Okay, and I didn't know really it was Bo Jackson at the time. I was young. I didn't know who that was, but now I do, and I'm glad we shut him down. So, but a lot of things happened that day, one of those which A&M won, 36-16, if you're keeping score. That's right. But something else happened that day. That was the day that little Robert, little 10-year-old Robert, fell in love with Texas A&M. I just fell in love with the whole atmosphere, the people, the sights, the sounds, the yells. Yes, we call them yells. We don't call them cheers. Just the whole atmosphere about the thing. And I remember thinking as a child, man, I even bought a little hat, you know? And I was like, when I grow up, and if I get to go to college one of these days, I'm going to go to Texas A&M. And I did. That's where I went. And I still can't help but pull for the Aggies, no matter what it is. I'm just rooting them on. And maybe you guys understand this. You understand having a team, some team that you've associated with, maybe a school you went to, whatever it is. You have your team, and you pull for them. Maybe for you it's the Huskers. Maybe it's Iowa. Maybe it's Denver Broncos or Minnesota Vikings, Kansas City Royals, whatever it is. You have your team, and you can't help but pull for them and cheer them on whenever they are playing. You understand that. What was interesting, though, is that three of the three national championships that Nebraska football won in the 90s was actually while I was attending Texas A&M, while A&M and Nebraska played football against each other. And so now I live in Nebraska. And I do cheer for the Huskers. I do. But let's just say I don't own a lot of Husker gear. Yeah. Actually, it was very funny. After the 9 o'clock service, I was out in the lobby, and somebody came up and gave me their Auburn pin. They had a pin from Auburn. I thought that was funny. I gave it back to him. So thanks, but no thanks, right? Do you know the last time A&M won a national championship in football, though? 1939, 79 years ago, but I'm still committed. I'm still committed. And I bring this up carefully, but it's been 20 years since Nebraska has won a championship in football. But you're no less committed, are you? In fact, you're more committed this year than you've ever been, right? Yeah. Isn't it odd? Isn't it funny how we can be more committed to a sports team sometimes than other people we should really be committed to? Isn't it odd that we can go so long, decades even, waiting for our favorite team to produce, to deliver, but yet we have a hard time waiting very long at all for our favorite person in the world, our spouse, to deliver what we think they should deliver? Isn't that odd? Maybe you're here and you're thinking, oh, great, a marriage series. This isn't for me. Either we've got this figured out, or we're beyond that, or I'm not even married yet, whatever it is. And so I just want to do a quick poll, okay? Just do me a favor. If I call your group out, raise your hand so everybody can see, okay? So if you're married, if you're here and you're married, go ahead and raise your hand, all right? So this series obviously is for you guys. You're going to hear a lot. You're going to learn a lot. Great resources for your marriage throughout the next 4 weeks, okay? If you're here and you're in a relationship with someone, but maybe you're not married, you're just in a relationship with someone, go ahead and raise your hand, okay? Yeah, some of you are like, we are? You are now. This series is for you. Why? Because you're going to learn a lot of tools and resources on how to interact with someone you really care a lot about, all right? Another group, how many of you in here, you're under the age of 18? You're under the age of 18. Yeah, you got, yeah, a lot of you in here. This is for you too. Why? Because you're going to hear things and you're going to learn things and you're going to see things played out that everyone who already raised their hand wish they had learned when they were your age, right? So let's see, I think there's one more group. How many of you, if you haven't raised your hand yet, raise your hand. How about that? You haven't raised your hand yet. Yeah. These are the over 18s, maybe not in a relationship, but maybe looking. No need to swipe right, people. Just look around. You're welcome. No, this is for you too. This is for you too, because you're going to, I don't know what your plans are. I don't know if you're wanting to be married one of these days, you know, that sort of thing. Most people want to be married at some point in their life. And so you're going to hear a lot of great things too. And if I could just speak to you just for a second, if I could just give you one free piece of advice, like the kind of thing that if you never walk away, I mean, if you only walk away hearing this morning, this is it, okay? You ready for this? Don't marry crazy. That's experience talking there, people. Don't marry crazy. Don't marry into crazy, okay? You don't want to marry into, you got to check this stuff out, okay? Check out their family. See how their family is. Now, look, all family has a little bit of crazy. We get that. But if their parents and their in-laws and all that, and they're just wacko, just do yourself a favor. Boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, shake their hand, say, glad we got to spend the time together, and walk away. Okay, save yourself heartache, save yourself headache, save yourself a lot of drama, okay? That's free, that's for you. Do with what you want to with that. So this is the Midwest, and we like to think we're unique, and we are in some things, but when it comes to marriage, we're really not that unique compared to the rest of the country. This crowd here is a good cross-section of the rest of the country when it comes to marriage. And so I want to go over just a few stats with you. If you're an analytical spreadsheet type person, you're going to love this, okay? But here are just some statistics on marriage. Those who marry after the age of 18 have a 24% lower risk of divorce, all right? Marriages where there is a significant difference in age between the spouses have twice the risk of divorce. Only 27% of college graduates will divorce by middle age, 27%. Having parents who have never divorced lowers your risk of divorce by 14%. Couples who live together before marriage, get this, have a 50 to 80% higher likelihood of divorce than couples who do not. A marriage in which the wife desires children but the husband does not, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out where this is going, is 50% higher than 50% risk of divorce. And I thought this one was interesting. Couples in which one spouse smokes but the other does not are significantly more likely to divorce compared to non-smoking couples. But marriages in which both spouses smoke were more than twice as likely to divorce compared to non-smoking couples. There you go. But one of the biggest predictors of marital success, okay, hear this, faith-based or not, Like you don't even have to go to church, you don't even have to believe in God, none of that. One of the biggest predictors of marital success is this: when both spouses go into the marriage with a strong personal conviction that that marriage is for life. That is one of the best predictors in marriage. And all these, where there's a strong commitment, in other words, marriage tends to do well. All these are numbers. Numbers are helpful. Numbers can help us. They can be our friend. They could help us show things. But in the end, guys, marriage is not a stat. Marriage is a story. Your marriage, it's not a set of numbers. Your marriage is a story. It's a story that you're writing even today. A story that you're telling by the way you live. A story that's going to be told of you. Children, grandchildren, friends. Now, if you're here and you're like, well, that's great, but I'm not even married. You're still writing your story. Because chances are, you will be one day. And the decisions that you're making today will impact your future marriage for better or for worse. Marriage is a story. There's a lot of areas in culture where culture and God seem to align. It just happens that way because we live in a culture created, a world created by God. So obviously there's going to be moments when the world and God line up. For example, culture would say to us, you know what, it's important that you be a good citizen and that you contribute to society. God would say, that sounds like a really good idea. Okay? Culture would say, for example, you know what, it's important that you be a hard worker because when you're a hard worker, everybody around you is going to benefit. God would say, absolutely. Sounds great. Culture would say, it's important that we all just be nice and that we're kind to one another and that we love one another unconditionally. God would say, I've been saying that for years. Sounds good. Like there's just certain areas where culture and God seem to line up. But marriage, on the other hand, seems to be, now more than ever, one of those moments where culture and God seem to be diverging at a fast rate. Culture, when it comes to marriage, would say things like, you know what, don't work on your marriage. It costs too much. It's too painful. People are going to get hurt. It's easier to just let it go and start over one of these days. Culture would say, you know what, if you're having to work too hard on your marriage, if it's too difficult, something's wrong. Maybe you married the wrong one. Something's not right. It shouldn't be that hard if it was real, true love, right? Culture's even trying to redefine what marriage is. Culture would say, hey, you do what you need to do. You protect yourself. You put things in place so that you can protect yourself because you being happy is really what's most important in your life, in your marriage. That's culture. God, on the other hand, is over here saying, no, marriage is not about you being happy. It's about you being holy because your happiness is going to come and go. Trust me, from day to day, it's going to come and go. God would say we need to give ourselves over to each other. We need to submit to each other so much so that other people looking in, they think that I think my spouse is more important than I am. Crazy stuff like that. God says you don't need to do all these things that culture's saying. He sees something completely different. God says marriage is it's not a contract that you can tear up if your spouse doesn't meet up to their end of the bargain. It's a covenant. Something that I, God would say, something that I designed to last a lifetime, your lifetime. In other words, marriage is a death match. Two of you go in, only one of you should be coming out alive. A death match. Culture is saying, give up on marriage. God says, give up in marriage. You see the difference? Culture saying it's too difficult, it's too hard, something's wrong. Just give up on it, start over, do over, rage quit, whatever you want to call it. God says, no. Give up in marriage. This is a personal thing. Big difference between those two. A healthy marriage is one where both spouses are continually, daily, multiple times a day sometimes, giving up for the other. And one of the things, and we're going to be talking about several of those things that we need to be giving up over the next few weeks, but one of those things that we want to talk about today is how we need to give up plan B. We need to give up the alternative, the other option. Give up plan B. We need to be ruthlessly committed to each other. Divorce is not new in our society. Divorce has always been around. It was definitely around when Jesus was here on earth. In fact, if you think our view of culture, our cultural view of divorce is crazy today, you should have seen it when Jesus was here on earth. In fact, one of the big differences is that back then, it was permissible for a man to divorce his wife, but a wife could not, under any circumstances, divorce her husband. So you can imagine just what could go wrong with that, right? And so not only did it exist, I would say it was even uglier back then than it is today. And so we're going to be in Matthew chapter 19. If you have a Bible, if you have an app, whatever it is, just turn there. We're going to look at a few verses in Matthew chapter 19. Jesus is making his way to Judea, and of course, he's being followed by a large crowd. Jesus is always being followed by a large crowd, okay? And so he's there, and there are some Pharisees there. Pharisees are religious teachers. These guys pretty much knew everything when it came to religion. They were smart, they were intelligent, they were decent people, but they just sort of were missing a lot of what Jesus was teaching. And they were there, and they wanted to kind of make Jesus not as popular as he was. So they ask him a very direct question about divorce in Matthew chapter 19. Here's what they say in verse 3. To Jesus, should a man be allowed to divorce his wife for just any reason? Now, it's important that we realize they already knew that it was permissible for a man to divorce his wife for any reason. So why were they asking this question? Well, there were two main schools of thought when it came to divorce back then. And I would say it's similar today. One school of thought was a very conservative view that only in the area of when adultery has happened could a man divorce his wife, okay? That was one school of thought, and it was held pretty much by half of the people. The other half of the people understood the more liberal understanding of that, that a man could divorce his wife for pretty much just any reason. Almost stuff as trivial as if she continually burned dinner. Okay? Some of you are looking at each other and like, we barely survived our first year of marriage. You know, or get this, if the man found another woman more attractive than her, he could divorce his wife. Okay? So you could see two drastically different views, and the Pharisees were asking him, Jesus, do you think it's lawful for a man? They were saying, which side are you on? It would be as if they said today, Jesus, tell us which group is better, Democrats or Republicans? They knew that whichever way Jesus answered, he ran the risk of offending the other group. And if he offended the other group, then that was at least about 50% of the population that would turn the other way. Jesus, you know, they'd go the other way. they won. The Pharisees would have won in that regard. But classic Jesus, he doesn't take the bait. Right? He knows why they're asking that. He knows what they're up to. Here's what he says in verse 4. Haven't you read the scriptures? Jesus replied. Now, this is what I call shots being fired by Jesus, okay? The scriptures he's referring to was the Old Testament law, the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. The Pharisees had not only read these books, they had memorized them. They had clearly read the books. And Jesus is saying, hey, you guys even read the thing that you say you memorized? This is, Jesus here is being what my kids would call sassy Jesus, right? They say that sassy Robert comes out every now and then. I don't know what they're talking about. So we'll just leave that at that. Clearly, Jesus was turning the argument back to them. He says, they record that from the beginning, notice where Jesus goes. Back to the beginning, very important. God made them male and female. And then he says in verse 5, and he said, this explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. It's very important that Jesus did not get wrapped up in the current argument. Rather, he goes back to the beginning and says, well, what does God say? And he quotes Genesis chapter 2 here. That is a direct quote from Genesis chapter 2. God goes back there. In fact, if you have a King James version of the Bible, this verse says that a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife. And so that's why this verse has become known, the leave and cleave verse, which is great. But if you are, you know, kind of a young adult, college age adult, and you're sort of in that what you think feels like a kind of a middle area where you feel like you've done some of the leaving already from your parents, and you've sort of established yourself as an adult, and you're doing things, you know, that you're going to be doing, but yet there hasn't been any cleaving going on, and maybe that's what you want. You're like, I haven't found that person yet. That could be really confusing to you, because the Bible doesn't say how long it should be between the leaving and the cleaving. And so you just have to kind of like live there in that tension. What can I do? Well, what you can do is the same thing that we're asking everyone to do. Be ruthlessly committed to who you're going to be married to. Well, that's foolish. I don't even know their name. Okay. Then be ruthlessly committed to a question mark until God one of these days fills that question mark in with a name. Because if you wait until you're married, well, that's great, but why not start now? How much better would it be for you now if you were to decide to do that? Be committed today. And then it says, leave father and mother and joined to his wife and united into one, literally glued together by God into one. Okay, I use this illustration because I think a lot of people understand it. How many of you have a bowl like this at home? I call this marriage according to Tupperware, okay? Like you obviously understand what has happened here. Something red like chili or spaghetti or whatever it is has been cooked in this bowl. Now, this bowl is obviously changed. Let me ask you this. How long is this bowl going to be stained like this? You have this bowl too, I see. Yeah. The two have become one, right? No longer will they be separate again. The two have become one. That's literally what the verse is saying. And God is saying, I am the one who's done this. You guys didn't even join yourselves together. I, God, joined you together, glued you together, okay? So one of the, and then he goes on. I forgot a verse. Verse 6. Since they are no longer two but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. There it is again. What? Who? God has joined together. Let no one. No one means what? No one. Not a trick question. No one means, hey, let no one outside of your marriage split apart what God has joined together. It also means let no one inside your marriage split apart what God has joined together. One of the ways couples split apart very effectively what God has joined together is by keeping their options open. Maybe you've heard that term before. I want to keep my options open. You guys ever been to a theme park? Like a theme park with a roller coaster and you've been on a ride and that sort of thing? So, you know, like right before is the actual go time, like right before you step onto the roller coaster, there's that exit right off to the side, the chicken exit. You know, it's like if you just can't do it, then I'm going to go out that exit, okay? If you just can't handle it. A lot of people go into marriage and they stay in marriage with their eye on that exit. Because if it gets too hard, if it gets too difficult, if it gets too personal, well, I can just go out the exit. And those exits are different for everybody. Maybe the exit for you is work. Like, oh, things are hard at home. I'm just going to pour myself into work, where I'm appreciated and loved and people, you know, practically clap when I walk in the door. That doesn't happen at home. They love me there. Now, maybe I'm just going to pour myself into my hobby. Why? Because it makes me feel good. I feel like I'm doing something, I'm working, I'm building something. I don't feel that way when I'm at home. Or maybe I'm just going to pour myself into someone else. Maybe I'm going to pour myself into that guy or that girl who, you know what, every time they see me, they smile. My wife or my husband, they don't smile anymore when they see me, but they do, and it makes me feel good. Maybe I'll just pour myself into that. But guys, our what we should be about is closing that exit, keeping our eyes off of that exit. Again, culture comes and says, no, Keep your options open because you don't know what's going to happen. You need to protect yourself. You need to put stuff in place so that if it goes wrong, then you have an out. And God says, no. Limit your options. Slam the door. Lock the door. Throw away the key. And then break the door handle off. Limit your options. Don't always keep your eye on that exit. Because keeping your options open is called focusing on plan B. And as long as you focus on plan B, then if plan A doesn't work out, everything and everyone becomes potential solutions for plan B. So don't focus on plan B. People say, you know, you don't understand. Our relationship is just, it's so toxic. It's gotten to the point where divorce is just the logical next step. And I get it. I get it. I get that that's where you are, if that's you. I understand. You're not alone, actually. There are several people there. And I get that you feel that way. But did you know you're not unique if your marriage has gotten to a point of where you feel like divorce is the logical next step? You know why? I think every marriage gets there. Every marriage at some point, one of the spouses at least, has an opportunity to take that exit. Guys, you only have to be married for a few years to have what our culture would consider grounds for divorce, right? I mean, you're getting a few arguments, you're getting a few fights, you've already said things and done things that the culture would say, well, that's not good. You need to get away from him or her, right? You don't have to be married that long to figure that out. So I want you to think about a couple in your life who you would say has a marriage worth emulating, worth copying. Like you look at their marriage and you're like, man, it would be great if we could have a marriage like that. Think of that couple, okay? Just in your mind, think of them. And I want you to ask this question of yourself. Do I really think they got to the point where they have a marriage that I would want to copy simply because they were compatible on every dimension? Do I think that they have a marriage that worth copying simply because they got lucky and just were born with good communication skills? That they've never really had any real conflict to work through? That life has been relatively easy for them? Is that really what you think? Because what I can promise you is this, that couple who's in your mind right now, that you would want to have a marriage like them, they got to a place where at least one of them had to make a choice. Do I want to take that exit or not? And they looked at each other and they said, you know what, this marriage thing, this is way more difficult than either of us ever imagined. But that is what the promise is for. And they found a way to work through or to begin working through whatever it was that was causing the issue. That is why you look to their marriage as one you want to copy. I promise you that. Just go ask them. It's something along those lines. When your eye is on plan B, like I said, everyone and everything else is a potential solution. As long as divorce is an option in your marriage, hear me on this. As long as divorce is an option, one of you will use it against the other as a weapon. As long as it's an option, you're going to get fed up enough, you're going to be in that argument for far too long, you're going to feel like you're losing the battle, one of you is going to use it as a weapon. You're going to throw that card out there. Guys, you do that enough times, and that starts to be extremely toxic. I have a lot of guys in my office, especially. I like to talk with more guys. I am a guy. I feel like I can talk to them a little bit differently. I have a lot of guys in my office. They get to the point where they tell me, you know, I just don't know what to do. Things are hard. I guess my only option is divorce. It's the only thing we can do. And I try to convince them. I'm like, dude, what do you think is out there for you? You know, you're 45, you got 3 kids, you're starting to go bald, your body's shaped like a pear. I mean, you're not exactly man candy here. I don't know, man, it's just the only option. I'm like, look, I know you've been looking, right? And you're looking over there and you're thinking, man, that grass sure looks greener over there. But don't forget, you have your own grass. And if you go over there, that grass is going to die too. Why? Because we all have baggage. We all have garbage and baggage in our relationships that we carry into each and every one of our other relationships. Now, God is great at taking care of baggage, but it's there nonetheless. And in the wise words of Lance Birch, I'd rather take out my own garbage than someone else's. When we focus on plan B, guys, everyone and everything becomes an option. So what do we want you to do? Let's put some handlebars on this, okay? First thing we want you to do, face current reality. Take a serious, strong assessment of where your marriage or relationship is at this moment. How are we doing? Let's face current reality. And if you decide that your marriage or relationship is struggling and it needs help, then admit it and seek help. That's what you do. That's how you get to that point. You take an assessment, how are we doing, and you seek out and you get help. Because if you can fix your marriage by trying harder, wouldn't you have done it already? Seek help. Now, the question inevitably comes up when we're talking about divorce and all of this. Now, what if Robert, you said this, what if I'm already divorced? What if we're just like right there, you know, it's practically done? What if we've been divorced multiple times? What if I'm in my third, fourth marriage, whatever it is? What about me? Am I done? Am I over with? Does God just overlook me now? Absolutely not. We don't want to sound and pretend like divorce isn't real and it doesn't happen. We all know that that's not true. But we have to admit, we have to be strong enough to admit that it's not God's original plan. God will never tell you to do something that goes against his will. And biblically speaking, because I know we're always trying to ask, what's the Bible say? What's the Bible say? Biblically speaking, there are times when God does permit divorce, but hear this, he never prescribes it. It may be permissible, but God never says it has to be probable. It's never a given. Nothing has to be a deal breaker when God's involved. And we have to realize that no matter where you're at in your situation, okay, like all of those scenarios I said earlier, no matter how many times you've been married and divorced and all of that, no matter where you are, you have to realize that God can still use that situation to bring about some of his greatest blessings. I truly believe that to be true. I do. You have to believe that. So, in other words, you're not a secondhand citizen in the kingdom of God if you've been divorced. You're not a loser. We don't look down on you. We don't think that you are a failure. What we do ask of you is the same thing that we ask of everyone, that you be ruthlessly committed to whoever you're married to right now. You can do that. You can do that much. You can start today and do that. But we have to teach from a biblical stance, which is what Jesus did. He didn't get bogged down in all the interpretations of what people thought God said. No. He just taught what God said. He went back to the beginning. And I thought about this the other day as I'm teaching our daughter how to drive. I don't start teaching her how to drive assuming she's going to total her first car. Like, okay, you're going to total the car. We all get that. Now, here are the things that you need to know afterwards. No. I teach her from the very beginning. Why? In the hopes of that she never has to experience totaling a car. And that's what Jesus did. He didn't get it bogged down in all the what-ifs and possibles. He went back and said, what did God say? What did God say? What's the original intent? Let's focus there. That's really the only place he can be. So the second thing we want you to do, and lastly, is decide once, manage daily. Write this down, take a picture of it. Remember this, decide once, manage daily. Decide those difficult decisions in your marriage early on or today even, and then manage those decisions early. For example, we're talking about divorce. Decide as a couple, you know what, for us, divorce is not going to be an option. Can we just agree that we're not going to go there? We're not going to keep that exit open. And then you'll spend the rest of your time together managing that decision. And so no longer do you have to worry, is that a thing? Is he gonna play the divorce card? It eliminates all that headache and heartache. And some of you may be like, yeah, that's all pie in the sky. That's not realistic. That doesn't work. Let me illustrate it to you. Your work, those of you who have jobs and you work, you were hired one day, I'm assuming, or you're just showing up. I don't know. Maybe they're paying you. Your boss hired you. Do you go back every day to that job and they say, okay, let's see if you're going to work here again today? I mean, unless you're a day laborer, I guess that makes sense. But chances are, most of you aren't. You were hired at some point, and now your boss manages that decision. Anybody watching the Olympics? Yeah, you need to watch the Olympics. We're seeing these commercials of all these athletes as children doing the sport that they now are competing with in the Olympics. Okay, it's awesome. So somewhere in that mind of that child, they said, you know what? I want to be in the Olympics. I want to have a medal. And that decision that they made once, they manage daily. It affects everything. It affects where they live, how much practice, how much sleep they get, what they eat, everything. And you're thinking, yeah, that makes sense. But they're like crazy committed to that sport. Be crazy committed to your spouse. So much so that people look at you and you say, that's a weird level of commitment. Look at your children. You didn't decide to have children and then every day of that child's life say, all right, come in here. We're going to decide if you're our child again today. How horrible of an existence would it be for that child to every day just be like, what about today? Is today the day that you decide not to be my parents? No, they know they are your child. And guys, if you neglect your children, don't be surprised when they get taken away from you. If you neglect your marriage, don't be surprised when it gets taken away from you. I know this sermon has to throw up some questions, and I'm a little intimidated by them, to be honest with you, but I'm going to do my best to try to answer some of them. And so if we can't get to all of them, please email them, come see us, we'll do what we can. What do you do when you have someone who you thought was safe to open up to, a friend, someone who knows all about how bad your marriage is, say that they no longer want to be friends with you because to them it's too toxic to be associated with you? It's a great question. A couple things here. First off, I would say I hope that this friend is the same gender. It's never a good idea to open up your marriage problems to someone of the opposite gender. Don't do it. Just don't do it. It's not a good idea. It will lead the wrong way 9 times out of 9. How about that? Let's assume it's the same gender, though. You need to have those people in your life who have refrigerator rights, okay? You need to have those in there. So the one thing I would ask is, why the change? Shelly and I had a very close couple friend of ours go through a divorce several years ago, and we were there, you know, we wanted to be there and help and listen and be the shoulder and all that sort of thing, but it got to the point where it was causing friction between us because that's like all we talked about, and we had to say, look, we need to throw up some boundaries here. Because we can be there for them at times, but you know, after this time, we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking about anything else, because it does. It starts to affect you. So I would say, one, is that the only thing that you're bringing to this friend? If it is, give them a little break, right? Give them some air, because if they see you, every time they see you, they're like, oh, they have to like emotionally get into that game mode where they're like, okay, here we go. I got to be. Now, we can do that for so long, and then we get super tired. So I would say this, keep those moments smartly, if that's a word, right? Like, don't just overexhaust your friends because they get to a point where it's just too much for them, okay? I would ask them, I would have a good, strong conversation with them and say, hey, why the change? It seemed like you used to be there for me. Doesn't seem like you want to be there for me. Am I overbearing? Something else going on? Just have that hard conversation. We're so afraid to have conversations anymore. Just have the conversation, okay? And I think if they're really your friend, they'll tell you the truth, and I bet you move on, and I bet you'll be stronger than you ever were before because of that. So great question. If I was married by the state but not in the church, is my marriage and subsequent divorce considered valid in the eyes of God? Who instituted marriage? Not a trick question. God. Long before the state was ever around, right? So if you ask someone from the state, they may gift you a different answer. But I don't work for the state, okay? I think God holds the supremacy when it comes to marriage. He created it. He came up with the idea. And so in his mind, that's what's most important in my book. Now, yes, there's some state things that we have to do because of all of that and taxes and all of the, yes, we have to do those sorts of things. But here's the deal. I heard this quote from a pastor friend down in Texas. He was like, you know, back in the day, it used to be that people in church got married in church and people not in church got married not in church. He goes, but anymore, it seems like all the people not involved in a church want to be married in a church building, and all the people that grew up in church want to be married in some barn somewhere. So don't think so much physical location, okay? Think more what is happening. Like the joining, the uniting, the gluing of the two, that can happen anywhere, okay? So hopefully that answered that question. If not, come see me and I'll try to confuse you even more. So, how can our culture be so confused about love and divorce? Some people describe the Bible as outdated and not in line with modern times. Could it be that it is not applicable to our current culture? The Bible? Not applicable. I don't think so. I think the Bible, being the very heartbeat of God, is the only reality that we can, the only subjective truth that we can turn to. Because you don't have subjective truth. I don't have subjective truth. Neither one of us can say what's absolutely true. So we have to turn to a higher authority. And for us, that is the Bible. And so I don't think that it would be, not applicable to or applicable. How do you say that? Applicable or applicable? Either way, you know what I'm saying. I don't think you would say that it's out. I would not say it's not for our current culture. I would say the opposite. Absolutely current. But yeah, our culture can be so confused about love and divorce. Absolutely. Why? Like I said earlier, our culture is just a representation of us left alone. Left alone, we will make everything about ourselves. Marriage, work, everything. We will find a way to make everything about ourselves. That's just our natural bent when it comes to the sin that we have. And so while I don't look at culture and say, oh, you're so bad, because really, what do you expect? Like, that's just what they're naturally doing, okay? It does make it difficult for us who are trying to go the other way, where life is not about me. Life is about others and pleasing God and all of that. It makes it very difficult when we're trying to do that. But I wouldn't look at culture and say, I don't understand why you're so confused. It's just the natural consequences of people doing life where they are the center of their world. That's what it is. And so, what advice can I give someone who is working to save their marriage, but their spouse isn't? Great question. We're going to talk about this a little bit later in the series, but there are going to be times in marriage where one of you is pulling the weight. Right? There just is. And so I would say this, what advice can you give to someone? Keep working on it. Keep working on it. And pray and hope that other spouse begins to work on it also. Because if they quit working on it, what hope does that marriage have? If they say, I'm the only one doing anything, because they're maybe literally the only one doing anything. If they give up, guys, what hope does that marriage have? And sometimes in marriage, that's the way it goes. One of you is pulling along the other one. And so for you as their friend, just encourage them. Be there for them. Keep them encouraged. What does God have to say about abusive marriages? Should divorce be an option then, or should they stick through it? You couldn't have filtered this one? Oh, wow. This is a much deeper question than I have time to answer. A very conservative view would say that abuse in terms of Scripture is not grounds for divorce unless you define abuse as abandonment. You have to do some things with the text in order for that to happen. I would say this, though. Do you give me like 3 seconds to answer that question? It's totally not fair. That is not a physical location you need to be in. If you are in that relationship and you are being abused, get out. I'm not saying get out of the relationship. We'll worry about that later. Get out. Get help. Get safe, right? And if you don't know how to do that, come find one of us and we can help you. But I will say this. Nothing has to be a deal breaker. Nothing has to be a deal breaker in God's sight. He is big enough to handle even that, right? But that's a difficult one. And so I'd love to talk with you more about that. Let me just finish with saying this. Some of you in here are the victims of generational ripples of divorce from way back when. What if your parents or your grandparents decided some of these decisions early on and then managed those decisions? How would it have affected you? So, you making these decisions, think, how is this going to affect my kids, my grandchildren? I think you'll see the value in it. And I hope you guys keep coming back the next few weeks to learn more and more areas that we need to give up in marriage. Let me pray for you. God, we admit that this is just one of those things that it's hard to learn, it's hard to hear, it's hard to live. We want marriage to be this idealistic dream that we've always had in our minds as kids, and when it's not, it's difficult. There's a tension there. But God, I pray that we can replace that tension with a reliance on you and not just a doubt that something is, that we've done something wrong or we've married the wrong person or it's broken. God, nothing has to be a deal breaker in your eyes. Your grace, your ability to overlook things, your ability to pay for and love is so strong. We can't even realize it. So I pray for all the marriages in here. Give them grace. Give them strength. I pray for those who aren't married and want to be. Give them patience. Give them a reliance on you. And I pray for us all that we can help our culture see that being ruthlessly committed to our spouse is just so weird that it works. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.